Can I sit here and read?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Because
I'm just like much more comfortable. Apropos of that, thank you. What I wanted to do tonight was, I had the pleasure while I was in France of meeting Jean Genet. Actually, I traveled for a little bit down to Morocco and met him there. And I wanted to read you some of what transpired when I met Genet, and especially the part of the conversation I had with him when I told him about my recent life in New York right before I went to Paris and to Morocco. So, talk about other people and other people's words. This is mainly for Genet. And it's, I just called it Tangier. Can you hear me? Okay, great. I'm just going to read one piece, and then we'll see what the time looks like, and if you're all desperately bored or whatever is happening. So. I'm sitting in the Café Tangier. It's a café in Morocco. And smoking a cigarette. Look, my friend Mikel says to me, that's Jean Genet. Jean Genet walks slowly. His hands are in his pockets. He stares as if he's not seeing anything, eyes fixed at this cafe. He stops. He stands still for a few moments. He looks like I always imagined he'd look. Then he swivels halfway around and looks at the Café Fuentes canopy. He chooses the Café Central. I have to meet him. I tell Mikel. He tells me not to meet him. Why? Is he horrible? He doesn't like to meet people, and he won't talk to you. He lives like a hermit. Everyone's told me that. I have to meet Genet. It's that simple. It's not often something simple. If Genet refuses to talk to me, I'll walk away so I won't be hurt. I watch him sit down in the Café Central and start talking to a young boy. An hour passed. Conversations, whispered at the edges of my ears, go on and on. One of my eyes is on the human goats and dogs milling around in the square. One on Genet's bald head. The minute he moves, I move. I ask someone the time. 3 o'clock. I say to my friend, I'm going. He cries, you're out of your mind. As I'm walking to Genet, I hear, you can't throw yourself on a famous writer like Genet, on a man who'll reject you. You have to learn to control yourself. Genet wrote, loneliness and poverty make me not walk, but fly. For I was so poor, and I've already been accused of so many thefts, that when I leave a room too quietly on tiptoe, holding my breath, I'm not sure, even now, that I'm not carrying off with me the holes in the curtains or hangings. Genet is walking. I walk slowly toward him. He stops, about 3 feet in front of me, his hands in his pockets, swaying slightly and leaning forward. I know I'm looking too hard at him. I say, you're Monsieur Genet, aren't you? He hesitates for a minute. He notices me, but he doesn't want to. Who are you? I can't really speak. I'm a writer. He holds out his right hand to me. Enchanté. I take it. As we walk up the Seine, I ask him if he likes Tangier. Ça va, he murmurs. Do you think it's beautiful, the most beautiful city in the world? Certainly not. What gave you that idea? Everyone says so. In Asia, there are many more beautiful cities. During the 20 minutes it takes us, me and Jean Genet, to walk from the square of the café to the Hotel Ninza, we talk about writers writing and some of the problems of publication. I don't like institutions, he says. We're standing in front of the Ninza. He gives me his hand and adds, I always take a nap around now. To Tomorrow, if you like, we can meet at the Cafe Omenara, around 2 in the afternoon. Today is a day like any other day. I don't know any reason I should feel differently. I'm sitting in the Cafe Omenara. Will he come or not? For me, it's the previous day, because what I want to happen hasn't yet happened. He walks along the white dust, slowly, like he did yesterday. I lift my hand. His eyes light up and he smiles. I stand up. We shake hands for a long time. He's warmer to me than he was yesterday. He sits down. He orders a glass of mint tea, and I do the same. Some people walk by me and disappear. Some walk back and forth as if they're looking for someone. These are mainly young beggars looking for tourists. I don't understand why they haven't translated any of your books into Arabic, I say.
I don't know. No one asked me to do it. Maybe someday they will, maybe not.
It depends on whether my things interest them at that point. Personally, I think the Arabs are extremely sensitive when it comes to questions of morality. Did you have a hard time writing your first novel?
No, not very.
I wrote the first pages of Notre Dame des Fleurs in prison. And when I was transferred to another jail, they somehow got left behind. I did everything I could to get them back, but it was hopeless. And so I wrapped myself in my blanket and rewrote the 50 pages straight off. I know you didn't start to write until you were 30, I say. 32 or 33.
That's right.
You haven't written anything for several years, have you? Do you consider your literary silence and your assumption of a political position part of your writing? Literally, I've said what I've had to say. Even if there was anything more to add, I'd keep it to myself. That's how things are. There's no absolute yes, and there's no absolute no. I'm sitting here with you now, but I easily might not be. Later, he tells me a story about Tangier. I knew a young sailor who was working on a ship in France. The Maritime Court of Toulon had exiled to Tangier an ensign who had turned over to the enemy the plans of some weapon or battle strategy or boat. Treason at its best is an act which defies the whole populace, their pride, their morality, their leaders and slogans. The newspaper said the ensign acted out of a taste for treason. Next to this article was the picture of a young, very handsome officer. The young sailor was taken with this picture and still carries it with him. He was so carried away that he decided to share the exile's fate. "I shall go to Tangier," he said to himself, "and perhaps I may be summoned among the traitors and become one of them." We're sitting in the Cafe Omenara, and I tell Janae some of the things that happened to me in my last weeks in New York City. President Carter is the pillar of American society. He's almost 53 years old. Worn out by decaying practices, he looks like a skeleton. He's hairy as a rat, flat-backed. His ass looks like two dirty rags flapping over a piss-stained wall. Because he gets whipped so much, the skin of his ass is dead and you can knead it and slice it. You will never feel a thing. President Carter's center is an enormous hole. This hole's diameter, color, and odor resemble a New York City subway toilet that hasn't been cleaned for 3 weeks. It doesn't resemble any asshole I've ever seen. President Carter, because he's such a queer little pig, leaves a 3-inch wall of shit around his asshole. And below his belly, wrinkled as it is livid and gummy, he has a shriveled little thing, a dried apricot pit that Richard Nixon vomited up. A cock. A
bright red head sticks out of this apricot pit, because at age 30 the president circumcised himself. All men who fuck ought to circumcise themselves and cut their cocks off. Men get circumcised so their cocks will stay clean when they fuck. President Carter is circumcised so he can make his cock even filthier by covering it with a layer of scum, dry, green piss and shit. President Carter is disgusting in his head and in his body. His tastes are more disgusting, and his smell does not please everybody. As a politician, he has many problems. President Carter needs 3 hours of stimulation to orgasm. This stimulation has to consist of perverted, cruel, sadistic, and endlessly prolonged events. Even then, it doesn't usually work, because the agents of these events run away faint and die too soon. When that happens, President Carter gets very angry. Foam spurts from his mouth. He becomes epileptic. When he's epileptic, he can orgasm. You see, our president is a man of many moods. These moods change from second to second, and he has no control over them. When the president's in a mood, he can't think or feel anything else. This mental disorder and his alcoholicism have turned him at this point into an imbecile. He's fond of saying to the dignitaries of other countries that he would rather be an imbecile than anything else. President Carter is a decadent man. Those who know him personally are convinced that he owes his present political power to 2 or 3 inexcusable murders. See, I was wandering around the streets with cancer. I didn't have any money, and I didn't know anybody. Although I didn't feel like a bum, I was hanging out on the Bowery with the leftover humans. One night, I wandered into this rock and roll club named CBGB's. The lights went boom, boom. The drum went boom, boom. The floor went boom, boom. Boom, boom entered my feet. Boom, boom entered my head. My body split into 2 bodies. I was the new world. I was pounding. Then there were these worms of bodies, white, covered by second-hand, stinking, guttered-up rags and knife-torn leather bands, moving sideways, horizontal, wriggling like worms who never made it to the snake evolution stage. We only reproduce, we say, if you cut us apart with a knife, the slimy saxophone, and the singer who's too burnt out to stick a banana in his cock flows away, always gooky, amorphous, ambiguous, nauseous, undefined spy story. No reality existed, so why bother to do anything? Boom, boom, boom was reality. Slimy, slimy, boom, boom. We don't give a shit, you see, about your money. It's not that we want your money. You have more money than us. You have more everything than us. You think we want your money and we want to kill you. We don't. We don't want your money. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. We're too screwed up. We live on the edge. We live on every edge conceivable and add a few. We are shit. This isn't anger. This isn't any emotion. It's living at the edge, at every edge. Might as well hate everybody. We don't want your money. We want one, to be screwed now and then. Two, to get some love in our lives. Three, to have free hospitals. Four, to have the constant option of one unpoisoned meal a day. We are all screwed up and we have wants. We have other wants. Love, love, love.
That's why we're screwed up. You'll never understand this because you don't live how we live. Actually, you do, but your diet pills and adulterous, sneaky, one-minute genital dribbles and money franticness and love of media and psychiatrists and everything that is anything have so taken over your minds that you can't see around them, see that you're actually scum, typical nothings who can't figure out how even to allow being loved without totally freaking and getting hysterical and destroying built-up rooms screwed because we can't figure out how to be always different without habits. Just like you. We are all alike. We are all immaculately crazy. Now that this is the nature of reality, this is what has to happen. One, I need lots of love. Two, you're going to give us all your money because you hate yourselves and because you know. Three, all power systems self-destruct with the advent of robot canaster players who show the girls what they're really like. I'm going to go to sleep. Good night. This message is a public service paid for by the Chase Manhattan Bank of North America. I didn't want anyone to notice me because I was blind, so I crawled under the splinters of the bar. The music stopped. A lot of feet passed by. Some of them by accident kicked me. One of them kicked me too hard. "Do you want to fuck me, scumbag?" President Carter said to me. "I can't fuck." "You got syphilis?" I got cancer." "Gee." He put his arms around me and he kissed me. "I used to be unhappy, oh yes. I lived in the corner of a room. Then you came along and fucked the shit out of me. I won't be unhappy again. Spring is a cock that's hard, oh yes. I know you're a secret terrorist, 'cause love, it leads to death. I won't be unhappy again, though it's been a week, so your love's almost over. The world's about to explode, and terrorists need no more cover, oh yeah. Love, it leads to death." I didn't want to hear any more of that political music shit. I just wanted to kiss the guy again and again. The music made it so you couldn't hear the words. And the music itself was so loud, the music couldn't be heard. You weren't hearing. This is beyond hearing. You is just vibrations, so there's no difference between self and music. President Carter was just there. That's the only way I can describe it. I didn't want to fall in love with him, because I didn't want to put something in my life. But he was screwing me so good, and he was beating me up. I knew I was going to fall in love with him. I did everything I could to avoid President Carter. I dropped out of everything. It's hard to drop out of a nightclub that's filled with teenage hoods and bums, but that's what I did. I roamed the streets of New York. The streets were black and full of garbage. I roamed the streets, not walk the streets, because I'm a cat. Cats adore being loved, but they don't want to be in prison. Cars drove by me. Big, rich Cadillacs, little snooky sports cars, the gray cars and the red cars. Each car had a personality. "Go to hell," a big black car said to me. Race, race, and toot, toot, or what the cars said to each other. On the whole, cars like each other and they don't like people. Few cars like me. A gray car whose behind was longer than its front and who was so smashed it looked like it should be dirty black smiled at me. A long, sleek, green car whistled. I could make a few dollars out of her. Then there were no cars. Two people passed by, men, older males, ages say 55 and up, bellies large, cocks small with slight dribbles, clothes suited wool, mouths open. The street was empty again. Actually, it had always been empty. It was me. I was a disjunct. You can smoke a cigarette. A cigarette is thin, long, and it contains fire. You can puff the fire. No one will arrest you. No cop cares. Even if you don't have money, there are butts on the street. Most waiters will give you a match. You see, there's no trouble. It's best to do things there's no trouble about. Being scum, being disgusting, lonely, alone, not bothering anybody, not wanting, being dark, in the dark. I tried masturbating. I tried. These are secret letters. Where I can say things that secret, in there, get in there, dark, like a canal. President Carter, I love you. No, that's the wrong one. Let's try again. I love you. I have to get beyond that one. The tunnel is my cunt. That's the first bump. A big, I love you. I don't want you to go away. I want to be in you, there, in between your right presidential arm and the skin on your side. Puke, mushy, I go mushy. I'm repulsive. No. I am hot. Now we've got it. I am hot. Oh, please fuck me for the rest of my life. The rest of my life means fuck me right now. As hard as you can. Okay. I'm telling you exactly what I feel because you never say anything. I don't feel anything. What do I feel? I've got cancer. Cancer is the outward condition of the condition of being screwed up. I am such a total mess, that is, a priori askew to the world, the nature of things, therefore myself, askew to myself, that I will never live without pain. I can't help but do everything wrong. Every incident reveals this. I'm saying I'm screwed up because I want you to tell me you love me. I know who you are. Go away, President Carter. Leave me alone. Our affair had come to a crisis. President Carter had to return to Washington, so he had nowhere to sleep together because I couldn't sleep in the White House and he wouldn't sleep on the streets. Huge hickeys covered my neck and back. I had asked President Carter to beat me up while we fucked and he had said okay, but we had nowhere to fuck. President didn't mind having nowhere to fuck, only I minded. He said all that mattered was there was political disruption in the air. I had to tell him, fuck you. Go away. I'm leaving you. I'm getting away from you. Whenever there's pain, I walk out. Whenever something goes wrong, I walk out. But I didn't. I stuck to him. I wrote these things about terrorism. Terrorism is not being conscious. Terrorism is letting happen what has to happen. Terrorism is letting rise up all that rises up like a cock or a flower. Tremendous anger and desire. Terrorism is straightforwardness. You are a child, only you don't imitate. For these reasons, terrorists never grow up. Terrorism is a way to health. Health is the lusting for infinity and dying of all variants. Health is not stasis. It is not repression of lusting or dying. It is no bonds. The only desire of any terrorist is no bonds, though terrorists don't desire. Their flaming, jumping passions are infinite, but are not them. No bonds. For these reasons, terrorism and health are inseparably bound. Terrorism can be fun. As far as big goals go, it has no goals, so you remain slum under. It has lots of little goals. You don't have to live anyway. You don't have to believe in any certain thing or world. You don't have to give a goddamn. Yet all the passion, the burning, the disappearance of is in terrorism. Terrorists believe in nothing and everything. Serious terrorists, every time they kidnap someone, don't believe they're changing anything. One of the most destructive forces in the world is love. For the following reason. The world is a conglomeration of objects. No, of events. And the approaching of events towards objects, therefore of becoming stasis, static, stagnant, of all that is unreal. You get in the world, you get your daily life, your routine. Doesn't matter if you're rich, poor, legal, illegal, you begin to believe what doesn't change is real. And love comes along and shows all these unchangeable forever fixtures to be flimsy paper bits. Love can tear anything to shreds. President Carter, it isn't sweet, and it hurts. Pain is the world. I don't have anywhere to run. I want to go out in a blaze of light and scream. Stick your cock in me as hard as you can. Hurt me. Beat me. If you beat me hard enough, I'll never leave you, and I'll do everything you say. Otherwise, I run away. I run away whenever I can. You take me by the hips and back of me. Your cock pounds steady. Bam, bam, bam. I start to come. Your cock moves harder, faster. You're hurting my cunt. Energy shoots up from the base of my spine to the top of my head. Every time cock hits in, energy paths set off. You become out of control, getting into me as much as you can. I'm beyond coming, in a space of consciousness and unconsciousness. Black. No more pain, like no more coming. I never knew I could get here. You stop. When cock out of me, I come down enough to start coming. gradually I stop coming. Sex, you're gonna stop. I hate you. You made me vomit and throw up and act crazy. Now I'm sick. You never say anything to me at all, nothing at all. I don't know what goes on in your mind. I didn't ask you to come here, to the street. Now everything's changed. Every position of desire, no matter how small, is capable of putting to question the established order of society. Not that desire is asocial, on the contrary, but it is explosive. There is no desiring machine capable of being assembled without demolishing entire social sections.
Hello. My name is Erica Jong. All of you like my novel, Fear of Flying, because in it you met real people, people who loved and suffered and lived. My novel contained real people. That's why you liked it. My new novel, How to Die Successfully, contains those same people, plus two new people, you and me. All of us are real. Goodbye. Hello. I'm Erica Jong. I'm a real novelist. I write books that talk to you about the agony of American life, how we all suffer the growing pain that more and more of us are going to feel. Life in this country is going to get more horrible, unbearable, making us maniacs, because mania and death will be the only doors out of prison, except for those few rich people, and even they are agonize prisoners in their masks, the ways they have to act to remain who they are. You think booze, sex, drugs, rich food, ways out? Temporary oblivion at best. We need total oblivion. What was I saying? Oh, yes. My name is Erica Jung. I would rather be a baby than have sex. I would rather go goo-goo. I would rather write goo-goo. I would rather write fuck you, up your cunts, that's who I am. The fuck with your money. I'm not catering to you anymore. I'm getting out. I'm getting out. I'm ripping up my clothes. I'm ripping up my skin. I hurt. Pain. Oh, hurt me. Pain, at this point, is good. Do you understand? Pain at this point is good. Me, Erica Jong. Erica Jong. Fuck you, you creep who's going to Australia. You're leaving me all alone. You're leaving me without sex.
I've gotten hooked on sex, and now I'm... My name is Erica Jong. There is God. God is disjunction and madness. I is now she. Shit, she. She, Kathy. Shit, Kathy, shit. I'm glad someone's explaining President Carter to me. Why do I write this down? I might as well admit to everything I do. Admit? Me? Everything? Kathy wants President Carter. President Carter may or may not want Kathy. Actually, President Carter wants Kathy. But Kathy wants to believe President Carter doesn't want Kathy, because it's more difficult for Kathy to deal with the situation. Kathy can't deal with any situation which isn't a mirror of her desire. Kathy isn't me. Which of the two do I think is real? Kathy sees too many people. Now that Kathy has a boyfriend, Kathy knows too many people. These people are too many because she has to talk to them because of her boyfriend. Each person is an asking, a peculiar kind of hole, asking some very definite energy from Kathy. Kathy is very scared of people because she's scared she's going to hurt someone. So what? She has to give a lot of energy to giving each person the exact right kind of energy. By the end of the evening, she is nothing. President Carter abandoned me. It took me 3 days to realize this. Then I wrote him a letter. I don't care what you do when I don't see you, etc. But when I make this effort to see you, within a few minutes you walk out, or else there are lots of people, and by the time we're alone, either I'm asleep or you're drunk. So we're never alone together for more than a few minutes, and we don't really talk or learn about each other and become better or worse friends. I think we should talk about our peculiarities, because I think the situation's getting a little weird, and I'm getting confused. I know I'm peculiar and hard to be with, but I really am confused because you don't talk to me and you don't fuck me, yet you want me around. You're gone, and there's no more love left in the world. I can't deal with you in my mind anymore. I hope I don't ever run into you again, even if you are President of the United States. Even before you left, knowing that you had power over me and were going to leave me, that future made us ghosts. That's how I felt. I hurt. That's how I feel. That is, either I judge and blame and hell exists, or I don't judge and everything's okay. Either this is a time for total despair, or it's a time of madness. It's ridiculous to think that mad people will succeed where intellectuals, unions, wobblies, etc. didn't. I think they will. I don't want to stop talking to you, Mr. President. You are my home, and now you're gone, I have no place to stay. I'd rather have nowhere to stay. All America wants somewhere to stay, an image, stasis. I'd like to say that everything I do, every way I've seemed to feel, however I've seemed to grasp at you, are war tactics. Through the arches of the Café Zagora, I can see the white area where the distant Atlas mountaintops fade into the white sky.
Rows of walls rise to rows of walls and upwards. Shanae asked me if I have a passport. Why do I need a passport? He wants to know if I can travel. I explain I got to Tangier illegally. I don't think I can travel. Shanae's going to leave Tangier. He wants me to go with him. I'm more excited than I've been in a long time. Since I'm dark enough to pass for Moroccan, I tell Janae, can you help me get a Moroccan passport? A long line of people in the government center building, in rags with faces of the dead. A skeleton runs out of a gray office and shouts at all of us. His whole attitude is nervous and shaking and mean. Janae walks up to him and talks to him. When Janae returns to me, he says, we'll have to come back here in an hour. An hour later, the office is black and horrible, more crowded. The skeleton official is cursing at the poor people and pushing them into lines. Bit by bit, the poor people go away. I don't know how I'm going to get a passport. The skeleton government official is still cursing the poor people, those shuffling hollow rags, even though they're no longer here. Janae murmurs to me, he's a pig, a brute, and shoving people around. The skeleton pig is still saying that these people, if they don't give him enough money for a passport, they'll lock them up. These people are all gone. Finally, when the building's being locked up, the skeleton pig tells Janae that I can get a passport if I have the proper papers. Fine rain is blowing across the sand of the streets. That man doesn't want papers. He wants a fistful of banknotes, doesn't he? I don't answer. We walk for half an hour on the boulevard. Then Janae buys a few newspapers and some magazines and goes back to the hotel. Today we got the passport. We found a friend who knew a government official, and we paid. Janae's giving a small party in his hotel room. I'm standing opposite Janae. Why are you taking her with you? Pointing to me, a famous older male friend of Janae's asks him. Oh, she works for me. She's a gardener. I want to laugh in the guy's face because Janae doesn't have a house or a garden. She's your servant. Janae thinks about this. I didn't mean to mislead you, he says. I don't consider anyone a servant. The strange man smiles. I'm accepted in this world. I shake hands with Janae. Later on, the same man asks Janae where we're planning to travel. I don't know. I know I can't go to the United States. The government won't let me in again. And I can't go to the Soviet Union for the same reason. In Journal de Voleur, Janae wrote, Movies and novels have made Tangier into a scary place, a dive where gamblers haggle over the secret plans of all the armies in the world. From the American coast, Tangier seemed to me a fabulous city. It was the very symbol of treason. Here, all the big men I've known, all the men who've hurt me because they had no feelings, or who've offered me affection and then stamped on me the minute I reached for it, and who've swung their monstrous cocks in front of my face and then laughed when I begged to touch. Traitors, fascists who need to connive, all of you live in this fabulous city. I worship you. I can't fuck anyone else. It's not your cocks, but it's your dishonesty, your need to maneuver and lie the way most people walk down a street that form those entanglements I call adventure. Everything else is dead. When I'm with one of you, I'm alive, and otherwise I don't give a shit. I don't call having some young boy between my sheets sex. I rarely let myself go for young boys or nice boys because I know I'll get bored. I want the texture of your lives, the complexities set up by betrayals and danger. I like men who hurt me because I don't always see myself. I have my egotism cut up. I love this. I love to be beaten up and hurt and taken on a joyride. This sex, what I call sex, guides my life. I know the sex of traitors, deviant scum, and schizophrenics exists. They're the ones I want.
Thank you very much, everyone. Wow. That's quite a trip.